On the occasion of this launch, it's my great pleasure to invite a friend to host a dear friend, Brian Jacobs from Emergence Capital, one of the firms in the cloud business that I respect the most in the whole industry. When the dot-com bubble had burst, there was, you cannot imagine, Silicon Valley seems like an incredibly arrogant place to you, right? Silicon Valley was actually afraid. And you could actually feel the fear in the air. Against that backdrop, Emergence Capital was founded by Brian and his two partners, Jason Green and Gordon Ritter. And it was a contrarian investment thesis. It was a completely contrarian bet on this whole service-oriented software, utility software business model, which came to be known as software as a service and various other variations, infrastructure as a service, data as a service, and so forth. And the whole field came to be known as cloud computing. But imagine an era when none of this existed, and these three guys were building or raising a fund to invest in this category. That takes vision, that takes guts, and I have tremendous respect for people who have vision and guts and do crazy things. So welcome, Brian.
Thank you, Sramana. You're very kind. I'm really happy to join you and your million by million group on this roundtable. I know you do great work and have helped probably millions of entrepreneurs by now, and I'm glad to take a part in it.
So, Brian, let's start off actually with some of your overview of where you started investing in cloud computing, and of course, a lot of water has flowed under the bridge. How do you see the evolution of the cloud computing investments, and then we'll get to the present landscape? How do you see the business changing, evolving?
Sure. So as you described, back in the bust in the years 2002 and 2003, we found ourselves in a very unique situation. The venture capital industry was paralyzed. Many of them had grown to be much too large for the markets that were available. Many of them had experimented with some crazy business models in the bubble and were trying to explain them to their investors why they tried such unproven investments. And we could see that there were some companies that were using the web technologies for business computing. And of course, Salesforce.com was one of the leaders and a company that we knew well, and we could see all of the advantages that came from this model. And we realized that this was the new architecture, that when technology goes through an architectural change, tremendous opportunities are created because it forces the incumbents to it makes it very hard for them to transition to a new architecture, and it's actually easier for a startup to build a business than for an established company which has a big installed base and lots of legacy practices that are hard to change with the new paradigm. So this was a fantastic opportunity. Our first investment was in Salesforce.com. We saw how well that worked, and we set off to find the next Salesforce.com. Unfortunately, what we found is that's a very unique company even today, and there's been very few companies that could really have as much success as Salesforce. But we were our primary thought process was, let's look at the big categories of software and find a cloud company that is going to disrupt those big categories. And we did invest in companies like SuccessFactors in the human resources space. We invested in Intact in the financial services category, and a number of these large horizontal SaaS companies. And that proved to be quite successful for us. But as we know, there's only a few of these large horizontal categories. You know, everybody has a sales organization, everybody has a marketing organization, everyone has a finance organization, everyone has a human resources organization, But when you get beyond that, there's really not that many categories of large software where there's an ecosystem of competitors and the opportunity to disrupt them. As we learn more and more about how the cloud changes things, have evolved our investment thesis, and we've found some new areas where the cloud really does provide a new opportunity. Rather than disrupting incumbents, we're taking advantage of the cloud to do things that we could never do before. So, for instance, the social wave in the consumer world, we knew that was going to affect businesses. If all of the employees and all of the customers are on social networks, well, that's going to affect businesses that try to serve those consumers, as well as the companies who have those workers in their midst. So we've invested in a number of companies that are bringing social technologies to business. And we started to realize that the technology trends were being led by consumers, but they absolutely have effects on businesses. And we're always looking for how those technology trends, which become visible in the consumer world, can be applied to business computing. I would say another key theme for us today is around vertical software applications. So initially we thought, geez, those are probably too small, and that's not where the big software companies lie in the old architecture. But what we've learned through investing in these companies is that the cloud enables vertical software companies to grow much larger than they could have with a client-server architecture. So many of our investments in the recent couple years are targeting industries like education, retail, healthcare, industries that actually haven't been strong adopters of technology in the past, but it's because they're with the client-server architecture, they can't really connect doctors on a hospital floor to the IT system. But with mobile technologies and the cloud, you now can include all many workers in industries such as I mentioned in the IT system, and these workers are the people generally interfacing with customers, dealing with exceptions in the field. They actually have the information that is critical to running a business.
So, yes, the horizontal opportunity is starting to kind of look, okay, it's done, been there, done that. The vertical opportunities also, there are lots of vertical businesses already in play. Now, sitting in 2014, what is the future? What is the next game? The social, of course, the consumerization of the enterprise is a trend against which there has already been quite a bit of investment. You guys have made investments. Other people have made investments. Where are you looking for deals now? And this is something that would be helpful for our audience, is that, you know, a lot of them are working on businesses. By the way, we have a company that I'm going to send you soon that is in the, you know, social cloud area. They're doing, you know, $1 million a year this year, 2 million run rate by the end of the year. So it falls in your sweet spot, which is a good segue into discussing what, you know, stage-wise, what are your thoughts, but also where do we go from here in terms of cloud investments?
Sure. So let me address the stage question first. We're a venture fund that, while we're smaller than many of the other venture funds in Silicon Valley, we're currently investing out of a $250 million fund. We do our checks are typically in the $4 to $8 million range, and our style is not to spread our bets across many very young companies, but to find companies that have established product market fit and can genuinely take good advantage of, you know, $4 to $8 million, which typically means they have a product that they know the customer meets the customer needs, and they now need to scale up sales and marketing. That's where I think we can provide the most value to entrepreneurs, is our pattern recognition around building a robust go-to-market strategy, taking advantage of the latest techniques in telesales, in digital marketing, and also some of the specific and unique aspects of using channels to sell cloud services. Those are all things that we have experience with and frankly can consume millions of dollars to build. So we're not the kind of investor that that invests in seed rounds with the hope that maybe something will emerge. We tend to make a concentrated bets on companies that we think can become industry leaders. So as far as the future of the cloud, I think we continue to see more and more innovation, and I believe that innovation begets more innovation, that once you see how the cloud changes your business, you start to see new opportunities that maybe weren't so visible initially. I think that this idea around industry cloud, which is a vertical software company that is enabling competitors to aggregate data and actually share data without compromising their trade secrets, we're very excited about that opportunity. And so it's a kind of a mix of vertical software with big data. The idea that by sharing data in the cloud, you can do some things that companies with a on-premise solution just can't do. So that's one of our key investment themes. Another one is something I mentioned earlier, mobile business applications. We think that the mobile phone is now effectively a supercomputer in your pocket, and there's no reason why every worker in your company can't be connected and using the information of from the company and also contributing information into the knowledge of the company. So we think that there is lots of innovation in the mobile space, but more companies are being funded in the consumer realm than in the business realm. And we know from experience that there's a major opportunity for businesses to take advantage of these technologies as well.
So we did, all of September, we had events around the launch of the e-commerce book that I just published, From E-commerce to Web 3.0. And e-commerce is very hot right now. And so is cloud very hot. And in both of those cases, I think there's one question that is coming up is that, when an industry gets to this mature stage, which both e-commerce and cloud are in a more mature stage now, not that disruption opportunity kind of situation, we see a lot of small businesses, something that is not going to be venture scale, but you can build a $5 million cloud business or a $10 million cloud business, and we are seeing it all over the place. And some of it is smaller slower growth, because in the international markets, for example, we have a big India practice, and the Indian SME market, even Indian enterprise market actually, is a very slow technology adopter market. However, there are lots of cloud companies that are now catering to the needs of these Indian SMEs, and there are lots of them. This is a big country. However, for these companies to become venture scale and be growing at a venture pace is something that is not clear quite yet, And this is true about a lot of the international markets. If you look at the Latin American situation, it's very similar. If you look at Africa, it's very similar. India, in fact, is more mature than some of those. China is more mature. But then there are a lot less mature markets like the Latin American, African, Indonesian situations. Very big markets. But there are lots of cloud business opportunities all over the place. Whether they're venture scale or not is a question that, it has to be evaluated. And then the other trend that we are seeing is some of those companies that have been built somewhere else, including Europe, by the way, are moving to Silicon Valley or moving to the U.S. and taking a global spin on whatever they have built. They've built good technology, they've built good customer bases, and then to go global and take on the U.S. customer base and become full-fledged larger software companies, they are moving to the U.S. Is this something you are seeing in your practice?
Yes, absolutely. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we believe that it's possible now to grow a business really from anywhere in the world to become a global leader. But the most common technique is to, I believe that the U.S. is well ahead of these other markets in adopting the cloud, and that what we've seen is the companies that emerge as the U.S. leader are then in very high demand in international markets. It, because the cloud is levels the playing field, and in most cases, these cloud applications can be accessed from anywhere on the planet, that companies naturally gravitate towards the market leader. And if hundreds of thousands of businesses in the U.S. have embraced a particular solution, most international business people realize that's probably the best solution. And in some cases, local markets, the markets will be fragmented depending on the country. So for instance, the financial applications don't translate as well across borders as some of these other solutions, even though the financial standards are merging to the point where that's going to become a single global market at some point. But in general, we tell our companies, win the U.S. market. Put all of your energy into winning the U.S. market, and the rest of the world will come knocking at your door once you've achieved market leadership. And so entrepreneurs from other regions have absolutely come knocking at our door, and we've worked with them to, in some cases, transplant the company into Silicon Valley, and in other cases, maintain their engineers in the local environment, which often have fantastic domain experience and a much better cost structure, but build their sales and marketing infrastructure in Silicon Valley, where we have the talent that is experienced with hyper growth and with capturing the U.S. market. And so that's absolutely a trend that we see, and one that we're trying to encourage as well.
And at what stage do you recommend people to make that shift in your orbit? So if are we talking, you know, get to $1 million and then move to Silicon Valley? Or are we talking get to $5 million and move to Silicon Valley? We see all kinds of permutations and combinations of this behavior, but I'm just curious what your thoughts are on this.
You know, I tend to think more in terms, rather than a revenue number, more in terms of product market fit. If you've got a product that is clearly meeting the needs of your customers, and you believe that it's time to really put your foot on the gas and grow your sales and marketing capabilities, then that's a good time to do it. And we see some companies which, for instance, are offering their product on a freemium basis. So they are getting no revenue from those customers, but you can start to see if the product is meeting the customer's needs. And that's more important to us than a specific revenue number.
But if you are going for freemium business, for the freemium business model, there are two issues with that, and we deal with that in our activities all the time. One is very difficult to bootstrap freemium businesses, right? You don't have investors and you don't have customer cash. How the hell do you get these companies off the ground? Unless you have, you know, money, you have had previous exits or successes, whatever, but somehow or the other, the bootstrapping stage then has to be managed.
Yeah, I think that's true. A key part of a freemium business is not just the free part, but the premium part. And the really hard part about those businesses is getting the right dynamics to have a viral spread of the free product while also figuring out those levers which create a conversion to premium. And I admit, if a company with a free product comes to us and they have no paid users, I'm not sure I would call that product market fit. But I do believe that you don't need a lot of premium users to prove the value proposition. And particularly, you can have mass adoption of the freemium products that demonstrate that product market fit that is so critical to justify additional investment.
Yeah. Now, question about a slightly different business model that we have seen, you have invested in companies in this business model, actually. Let's use the example of Athena Health. This is a very large public company. It's a software as a service company, but it's not just software as a service. They actually do outsource the entire business process of collections on behalf of physicians' offices to collect money from the insurance companies. And it's a very, very successful company. It's, you know, it's really hot and as a public company as well. This model of, you know, not just software, but what I call software-enabled business process outsourcing, how much of this are you seeing out there?
I like your name better than the one we use. We use the term technology-enabled business process outsourcer, which is kind of a mouthful. but we absolutely see that trend. I think in some ways, purchasing a software as service application is a way of outsourcing the management of that application. And so you don't need to have world-class IT. You don't need to have the infrastructure. You can let someone else manage that. And in fact, you can let the company who does it best, the creator of that software, manage your application for you. And so it is a form of outsourcing. It's outsourcing just the IT portion of managing the application. But I think there is an opportunity to outsource even more than that. And I think Athena Health is a great example of this concept. It's a software-driven company, but what they're delivering is not software. They're delivering the output of a business process, and that can be that is typically a much larger opportunity than just selling the software. But it's a harder business to manage. There's people involved. Operationally intensive. I think that's exactly the word I was searching for. So we think that in some cases the market will want just the SaaS piece of it, and we have lots of examples of that. But in other cases, the market doesn't want to outsource the IT portion of it. That's not enough value versus outsourcing the entire business process. I mean, we always look at ADP as one of the original companies of this category. They are driven by software, but the end product is a paycheck, and there's a lot of additional work that goes into creating that end product.
Yeah, the other thing that I've seen in my career in various instances is that people get software, and they don't know how to use it, or they don't really have the staff who can really take advantage of the capabilities of the software. So you kind of deliver a Ferrari, they're driving like a Toyota, and it's, you know, they don't really take advantage of the capabilities of the technology. So, you know, in a lot of those cases, actually, this model, the SaaS-enabled BPO, let's call it, model, can deliver a lot more value because the people who are driving the software are driving it like if the car was designed to be driven.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Though I would say that the shelfware phenomenon is going away in the cloud world because most SaaS, you can stop the subscription if you're not getting value or your employees are not using it. And the SaaS companies today are all very attuned to the understanding that if their customers are not getting value, they will leave. So every company we know has this customer success function now, which is all around making sure that the customer really is using the product and not just, you know, they didn't buy it by mistake. But I think your main point is an excellent one, that with this SaaS-enabled BPO model, there's some shortcuts you can take. First of all, you don't need to support the software in remote environments, so you can control how it's being used, who's using it, and you can design in features that probably wouldn't survive in the open market, but can be shortcuts for your own employees to deliver the service. And I think that's a great leverage point in that business model.
And I think that becomes kind of interesting when, you know, you look at some of these new industries that have developed and scaled, right? There are probably a million e-commerce merchants, small merchants that, you know, run shops on a Shopify or a BigCommerce or one of these e-commerce platforms. And they have a set of specific needs. And they are small businesses. So it's difficult for these small businesses to run all those different business processes internally, to be able to outsource some of these processes to, you know, these SaaS-enabled BPO shops would be, this is just an example of a segment, but this is true about a lot of different segments, that, you know, having to hire capable people who can perform that function versus outsourcing it to an not just software, but also the execution of the software is very useful.
Yeah, we're starting to see, you know, the modularization of businesses where an entrepreneur in almost any country can build a fairly scalable business all by himself or herself, merely by choosing the components of the business that they need and writing a few lines of code to stitch them together. And before you know it, they can be serving web pages, shipping product, collecting across borders, paying their taxes. All these things are available as a service, and that's a tremendous capability. That's, again, it's an example of the cloud really changing everything and how you start a business, and that begets more innovation. That's very exciting to us.
Yes, and this whole, you know, zero logistics e-commerce companies trend has entirely been built on top of the cloud services, modular cloud services that have been plugged into, you know, somebody is doing the fulfillment, some, you know, it's just incredible how category-leading companies, sizable, multi-million dollar category-leading companies are built on these very ultra-light organization structures.
Yeah, we don't see an end to the innovation anytime soon. I think... you know, there's lots of nooks and crannies that could benefit from the cloud architecture, and I think the international opportunity is massive. I think the idea of giving workers mobile devices, or actually, typically they bring their own mobile devices. You just have to give them a link to the application. That all of these things lower the cost of computing, which just makes it more and more available to smaller and smaller companies, and I would also mention we are seeing now companies that are targeting Salesforce.com, the granddaddy of all cloud companies, with the next generation of SaaS offerings. So even the big companies that have taken advantage of the first wave of the cloud, they're not safe from this innovation. They will have to struggle with companies that have more lean business models, you know, better technology, integration of things like social and mobile from the get-go. These things are true innovations that will keep driving the industry forward.
Super. Brian, I know you have to be at a board meeting soon, so thank you for being with us, and I look forward to talking to you later.
Sounds good, Sramana. Thank you so much for having me. I regret that I can't stay and listen to the pitches that are coming up. Unfortunately, I do have a board meeting I need to get to, but I really enjoyed our conversation.
Bye-bye. Take care.